Golf Smarter number 118 for March 18, 2008.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Faldo Golf Institute Senior Instructor Mike Ellis.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for checking in for another episode of the Golf Smarter Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up today at audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter and download your free audiobook. On our last episode, it sounds like those TV shows, previously on Golf Smarter. We had a chance to take a detour of the Shadow Ridge Golf Course designed by Nick Faldo. Well, while I was down in Palm Desert, California, which is a suburb of Palm Springs, I guess if you can call the expansion of Palm Springs a suburb. Anyway, I discovered that the partnership between Marriott and Nick Faldo goes beyond course architecture. This resort is also the home of the Faldo Golf Institute at Marriott. Our guest today is their senior instructor, Mike Ellis. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you, Fred. Nice to be here.
Yeah, thank you very much. What is the relationship that Faldo has with Marriott?
This is the Faldo Golf Institutes. We have currently three of them in the U.S., one of them in the U.K., is a Marriott product. So anywhere you have a Faldo Golf Institute, it's at one of our Marriott resorts. Here in Palm Desert, we're at Marriott Shadow Ridge, and obviously we have our Golf Institute here. We have another big institute in Orlando, Florida, at our Marriott's Grand Vista property, and another one in our Marco Island property. The Rookery is the name of the golf course there. So,
where's Marco? I'm sorry.
Marco Island is right near Naples.
In Florida.
In Florida, yes. Uh-huh. Sorry. Three very nice properties. And then, of course, we have one in the UK at a place called Brockett Hall. But the Faldo, our programs here, we have a beautiful facility. Marriott had the foresight of knowing that we were going to have a golf school here. And so we have very great teaching venues. I mean, we have some beautiful short game areas that we take our students to. We have our own private instruction tee on the back of our driving range. So it's just a nice atmosphere for the student. It relaxes them. It's beautiful out here. You see the snow on the mountains. And, it's just a beautiful place to work on your game.
Yeah. And did Faldo also design the golf course?
Yes. This was Nick Faldo's first design here in the U.S. He has done another Faldo golf course at our Marriott property in Scottsdale, JW Marriott Wildfire there. It's actually called the JW Marriott there is Desert Ridge, but the golf course is called Wildfire. Beautiful property there. They have 36 holes there. Faldo did 18 of them. He did just opened one in Hutchinson, Kansas. And the name escapes me right now. I should know that, but beautiful.
Sorry, it's not a quiz.
Very good. Thank you. I've seen pictures of it, and it's just fantastic, the layout. He had a great piece of land to work with. And he did one in Toronto, and he's done a few over in Europe. So his design business is taking off, and he's done quite well.
And you're the senior instructor here in Palm Desert.
I am. I joke about that because I have gray hair. I'm the senior instructor, but
isn't that a requirement?
Yeah, right. I had a team of three instructors. We have plus myself, so four instructors. We have a couple. We say part timers. All our instructors are certified instructors. We have a very strict certification program that we have to get all our instructors to go through, because we want them all to be talking the same language. It would be a shame to go to our Grand Vista property at our Faldo Institute 1 year and then come out here the next year and have our teachers talking about something totally different to that student. So we have a very, very strict certification program. So
elaborate on that for me.
Yeah. This is all based on Nick Faldo's philosophies in the game of golf. And it's very much a fundamental approach to teaching. We believe in having the proper posture and the grip and alignment and ball position and such, and we can talk about that in a little bit. But the certification program is based on his teaching philosophies, and we want to make sure that we all talk the same language. We have We have to have so many hours of observation of us teaching if you want to be involved in our programs, teaching for us. You have to pass a 180-question test. So it's a pretty strict little program, you know, and we like it that way. It's we all talk the same language is how we put it.
So. And did you have an opportunity to apprentice with Valdo at all? I mean, how hands-on is he?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. He was very, very instrumental in getting our program going. Our Valdo instructional workbook. This is all his words, you know, that we give to all our students. But it's not like he's out here teaching our students. But he comes out here occasionally. He's probably out here two or three times a year, and he's very gracious to our students. He will always come out to the instructional tee and say hello and sign anything that anybody would like.
How cool that,
but it's,
yeah.
You know, like I said, the relationship that he has is with Marriott. You know, he's paid a fee, but it's not like he's out here teaching our students. But it is his philosophies and his way of teaching.
And have you had a chance to work with him or apprentice with him? Or
I've had a chance
met him,
to interact
sure.
With Nick, but our two guys, our director of instructional programs in Orlando, his name is Chip Kelke. Nick worked with Chip for a few years there while Nick was still playing, and then the senior instructor there at our Orlando property or Grand Vista property, Dave Dolengowski, who happened to be one of my roommates in college. He's a great great guy, wonderful teacher. Also has worked with Nick. So Nick's a busy guy now. You know, he's got other things going on. I mean, he's a golf announcer, obviously, for CBS and the Golf Channel. That keeps him busy. He's going to be the Ryder Cup captain for the European team this year. So he's got a lot on his plate right now. So playing is probably way down on the totem pole of things to do right now. But
and I think teaching would probably drop below that.
That's right. That's right. but he can still golf his ball, I'll tell you. But to get back into that competitive arena, you know,
it
takes
different.
Quite a bit of dedication. And he's got other things going on right now. So
what is Nick Faldo's teaching philosophy that you're able to teach?
Well, we feel we put, you know, our commercial, we put fun in fundamentals, you know, so we want our golf schools to be very, very fun for the student. We're in a beautiful climate here, beautiful golf course, beautiful resort, but the program itself, we're very much talk about making sure that the student leaves here with the proper setup, because we feel that's such the biggest influence in how we swing the golf club. For instance, you know, we have posture, how we want the student to set up in a very athletic posture position. Our posture will dictate how you swing this golf club around our bodies. Most people aren't doing this very efficiently, and we feel with better posture, you're going to be able to do that. We feel that you have to have the proper grip, and this is nothing new in instruction, you know, but we try to make it fun and show the student right away how this can affect their ball flight and such. But the grip will obviously affect your club face. And if you can't control the face of the golf club, the golf ball is going everywhere, which makes golf very difficult. The alignment process can affect the path that the golf club takes, which obviously is going to affect contact and direction, and then ball position that affects contact and direction as well. So we start
ball
there.
Ball position meaning
where it is
stance,
in relation to your body. Your body. Mm-hmm. Right. So we start there. Now, we have a very state-of-the-art video system that we also use to check golf swings. So we film students from a down-the-line view, looking down the target line, and then we film them from face-on, which, again, is nothing new in instruction in today. But we have a live internet video system. So we give the student their – we film their swings. We bring them over to the laptop. There's a microphone there. I start talking in the microphone as we're drawing lines and everything on the screen. We do a side-by-side comparison to Nick Faldo. We show them step-by-step, hey, this is good. This isn't so good. This is what we need to work on. Now, most...
And that's, your comparison is always against Faldo?
It is always against Nick Faldo. You know, being the Faldo Golf Institute. Now, we have capabilities of, you know, if someone says, hey, look it, I'm a 280-pound guy and I'm 6'4". Well, do you have anybody that would be more my size that I could look at?
Not on the tour.
not on the tour. Right? But you get my point. We have other swings that we can look at. But basically, we're not trying to make everybody into Nick Faldo robots. But, you know, if you swung the golf club like Nick, it wouldn't be a bad problem. So everybody has their own swing characteristics. Now, we believe that, you know, we have different programs. We have a three-day golf school. We have a two-day golf school. We have a half-day programs. We have one-on-one, one-hour lessons. And we always use that video system filming their swing. So when I am analyzing the swing, and we start off with the setup, then we get to swing, there's going to be some immediate things that we change, and then we'll give the students some long-term things to work toward. We're not into, you know, break it down and build it up again from scratch. I mean, I don't think anybody has enough time to do that, really. So we work with what you have. We show you, hey, look it. We feel that this is what needs to change first, and we'd like to see you work toward this next position. And that's what makes it fun. I think it's brutal for most students to come to golf school, and you got to change every little detail. Now the student can't even hit the golf ball, you know. Guy has a great grip, but changing his grip didn't help him hit the golf ball any better.
Then let's talk about the follow-up that you guys provide.
Yeah.
You mentioned a video internet system.
Yeah, so when I do that analysis, you know, like I said, my voice and all the lines that I'm drawing on the laptop and showing positions is going on to an email that I send to the student. So as soon as I'm done with that, that goes right to their email address that they give me. They can punch it up. They can listen to me and watch the whole golf lesson there, which is great. And I think most of us are very visual people, visual learners. And I don't want to say everybody's like that, but I think once you can see what your swing really looks like rather than what you think it's doing, I think it's the greatest tool ever.
And I'm sure that you, I'm not making any accusations here, but I'm sure you were instructing before they were using video.
Yes. You know, and you know, and I look back at that, Fred, this is actually, I'm 47 years old. This is my 26th year teaching golf. Okay. Started teaching right out of college. And I look back.
When are you going to get a job?
Yeah, I know.
You probably
I've heard that before.
You know? Your parents going, so when are you going to start working? Playing
so,
golf all
you know,
day?
26 years of teaching. And I would have to say only, I don't know, 20 of those years I've been using video.
Mm-hmm.
So I look back at those first 6 years. I know I was helping people, but
not sure how.
but the thing of it, yeah. So if you think about it, I go out there and I said, yeah. Well, you're coming over the top. You know, your swing angle is a little steep, and for the average Joe golfer,
blank stares.
They're going, what?
Yeah,
what was that? But when you show them,
right,
as compared to what it should look like, then you know the light bulb clicks on. So I'd like to think that I helped every student that I taught, but I look back at those 6 years and I wonder. What would I don't know what I'd do without video. Now, there are teachers out there today, and I have respect for anybody teaching the game of golf, but there still are some teachers out there that are dead set against using video. And I'm thinking to myself, what a great communication tool it is. Not only, you know, the student understands it better, it's easier for me to bring across what I'm supposed to help the student with. I mean, just, it's a great tool. Mm. So our system that we use, I know there's many golf schools out there. I don't think many of them are using the system that we have, and it's just phenomenal.
And when you say your
great
system,
feedback.
What is it that sets it apart from everybody else?
Well, I think that live internet thing. I just send it
being able to email
format.
It to
you know, some for years when we first started doing this, we did VHS tapes, so we had a VCR out there, and as we're doing the lesson, when we're done, we take the VHS tape out and say, you know, here's your golf lesson. Well, you know, I don't know many people that have VCRs anymore. It's all DVD. So we have the capability of doing a DVD lesson. But this is even better.
Yeah, much better.
Yeah.
Much better.
So it's...
Put it on YouTube. Let everybody see it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And what kind of follow-up... if I were to come in and do your three-day improvement school, you have three-day mm-hmm. improvement school, two-day golf school,
mm-hmm.
and we'll talk about what the differences of those.
Yeah.
Then you have your one-day short game session, full swing session. So a person will work with you. They spend 3 days with you. They find faults in their swing. They can see the faults with the video. And then by the third day, they're starting to get the hang of exactly what happens.
Yeah.
Then they go home, and they don't get to play for a week, maybe two.
Right.
And it just doesn't click the way that it happened while they were here. Are they able to come back to you and
absolutely.
Please,
yeah.
What am I doing now? How come I'm...
Here's a great example.
Thinking too much is what they're doing.
Well, more than likely, yeah.
Yeah.
This is a good example. I just got finished with four four guys today in a two-day school. Just got finished with them. And my last, you know, presentation of them was making sure they understood that they're part of our program now. Okay, they can call me, they can email me anytime they want. And I kid about it. I'm not a lawyer. I don't charge for phone calls. Okay, so they can call me, and I can help them out. You know, so let's say you go to the range, and boy, I just had this yesterday, and I don't have it anymore. We can talk through it. And I've got a good memory. I can remember all my students. So, and very often we have many people that call us back. Or
fabulous.
Then they say, okay, well, look, I'm an owner here, just like you are, and they say, well, you know, I'm coming back here same time next year. What do you suggest that we do? Do you think we should do this three-day school again? Well, if you'd like to, sure. But some of these half-day programs are great refreshers, you know. So, for instance, our sessions, we call them sessions. We hold them from 8:30 in the morning till 11:30 in the morning or 2 o'clock in the afternoon till 5 o'clock. And we have two different types of sessions, one that covers full swing, one that covers short game. Our teacher-to-student ratio is always one teacher to four students, never more than four students in class, which is very, very nice. Everybody gets their own time with me. So in our full swing session, we're going to do some videotaping, just like we would do in a three-day school. So they're going to get their videotaping. In our short game session, we cover putting, chipping, pitching, and sand in that three-hour time frame. So that's very often what the three-day student does the following year or in a follow-up type of situation. Or they say, you know what, maybe if you can just give me a one-hour private lesson. And I do that very often. I got here in 01, so what's this? This is my eighth season here at the Faldo Institute. And so we have many, many repeat students that come back year after year. And we enjoy that, you know. That
I would think
shows
so.
Us
That's
that
great.
We're doing a good job, you know.
Right.
People are enjoying it. So, yeah, so the programs, you know, the three-day golf school is a very intensive program, but it's fun. All our programs include golf here at Shadow Ridge. What a great deal that is. I mean, it's a wonderful golf course. You just got done playing it. So our three-day school, for example, we start off with putting and chipping first part of the morning, and then we spend the last 2 hours of that morning working on full swing, and that's when we're identifying. We're filming every student, and we bring them over one-on-one.
That's the three-day school?
That's the three-day improvement school.
So you start with short game?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's go right to it now.
Yeah.
Where do you start with the short game? I'm fascinated by that. I love the fact that you would start there. You know, it's so often I'll be out on the driving range, watch people, and they'll bring out, the first club they bring out is their driver.
Yeah.
And
we see it all the time.
Yeah. Is that what you advise people to do?
No, heck no. You know, because here's what happens to most people. You know, your tee time's at 10 o'clock. Rush, 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 get to the golf course. You got 5 or 10 minutes left. The student or the golfer says, well, I better go warm up in the range. Well, and then they think, okay, what club am I going to hit off the first tee? Well, it's the driver. I better pull out the driver. Well, it's the total wrong way of doing it. We believe, you know, and it isn't always the case, and I'll get back to this in just a minute. I believe that if you can start off with a putting stroke, which is short, go into a chipping stroke, which is a little longer, go into pitching, which is longer, and then into full swing, you're starting from small and building into big. I think that's the way to do it. Now, unfortunately, that isn't always the case here. We, like, for example, starting tomorrow, we have 12 people in our three-day school. That takes care of three instructors. I've got another guy doing a short game session and another guy doing a full swing session. So
business is good.
Business is good. So that's 20 people. Now, not all 20 people can start with short game.
Right.
So very often we have to have two groups of people start with full swing while two groups of people start with short game, and then they flip-flop, you know. So I like, as a teacher, when I can, to always start with short game, but sometimes I can't do that. But certainly, if we started with full swing, we're going to get to the short game the latter part of that morning. So look, that's day one. Putting, chipping, full swing, fundamentals. And then we break for lunch. We have a club fitter here on property. He's a master club fitter. Does a little presentation on club fitting at lunch with our students. And we have lunch with our students. And he talks about, he does a little analysis. He'll take a few of their clubs out while we're out teaching, and he'll analyze their clubs. Like, he checks the shaft flex and checks the loft and lie angles, checks the length of them. Now, that isn't a club fitting, because in a typical club fitting, you'd have to take physical measurements of the student as well. He's doing a club analysis. So it's it's pretty interesting at lunch when we get somebody in our golf school that says, okay, I just bought these golf clubs. And the Griff's Graphite Shaft says it's a stiff shaft. And he puts
and they
on,
bought it right off the rack, and they didn't get
exactly,
fitted.
Exactly.
Right?
And he puts it on the machine and checks the shaft flex, and it's a senior flex and not a stiff flex.
Oops.
And they go, oh, and this, you know, but, you know, anything that's mass produced, it's you're going to have some flaws in it. So we believe in custom fitting, you know. So he's.
We emphasize that on this program so often is to get fitted for clubs.
Oh, yeah. It's like you and I going to buy a suit. I mean, we're not going to get the same size. And,
right.
But, you know, and everybody's different. It doesn't mean because you're tall you need long clubs and because you're short and you need short clubs. It has to do with how long your arms are, how long your legs are.
Right.
We've seen basketball players. When I was in Orlando, so a lot of the Orlando Magic players used to come to our Orlando facility and get fitted. And you take a look at these guys, 6'8", 6'9". What's the first impression? Well, this guy needs a long golf club.
Yeah.
Some of them have very long arms, too. So not all of them need long clubs. But so back to the day one, not to ramble on here. But
no, that's okay.
So at lunch, we have that presentation of club fitting. And then the student is free to go play the golf course. We have tee time set aside for the whole group to go out and enjoy the golf course in the afternoon. Now, as
do you ask people, I'm sorry for interrupting, but do you ask people before they come out, have you recently purchased new clubs? Are you thinking about purchasing new clubs? Or
we don't.
It's like don't buy clubs before you come here.
Yeah. We don't, and maybe we should, but you know, our main emphasis is on the instructional portion of it, but we are here to...
But you have a club fitter.
We have a club fitter because we
That's
feel
awesome.
That, look, if we're trying to get you into a better posture position and your clubs are too long, it's impossible or too short.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you have directional problems and the shaft flex isn't right and your lie angles are all messed up, it's impossible. Great instruction is good for the student, but if your clubs don't fit, it's going to be inconsistent.
Let's talk about chipping for a while.
Yeah.
Can we?
Chipping?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about the short game and chipping and what common mistakes amateurs make and how you help correct them.
Yeah, I think, again, when we're looking at a technique in regard to chipping more being more of a running type of shot,
right.
Pitching being more of a lofted type of shot.
Exactly. So
in a chip shot, the things that I think are most...
And we're within, 5 to 15 yards from... It doesn't matter what's in front of you.
Right. You know, it could be a closely mown area that you could run it up through the fringe and onto the green, or you have a whole bunch of green to work with. There's been studies done on people that are way smarter than me that say, hey, look, get the ball on the green quick and use the green and let it roll like a putt to the hole. But in regard to the technique.
And do you believe in that theory?
Oh, I totally okay. believe in that theory.
Let it roll as long as
you
can.
Sure. I think it's simpler. But the things that I think most people don't understand is the setup, how important it is. And in my opinion, if you're chipping, the stance should get narrow. Your weight should always favor your lead leg. Most people don't do that. And there's a couple of reasons why you favor your lead leg. If you're on your lead leg, you know, leaning onto this lead side, and you keep that weight there through the whole swing, you're going to have a very descending angle of attack to pinch the ball off the turf. Most people are leaning the other way, trying to help the ball up into the air.
Right.
We see a lot of people that sway or move side to side. Well, if you can keep your weight on your lead leg, that doesn't happen either. All right, so crucial. And then ball
position.
What
about opening your
We say to flare the front foot out just a little bit.
Okay,
but
as opposed to just
and
opening
I see
your
people
stance?
That open the stance.
Yeah,
but if you can keep the golf club going along that target line, I'm all for an open stance. But usually, when we see open stance, we see open shoulders that cause you to pull it over here to the left.
Interesting. Very
so,
good.
So, you know, and everybody's different. So you'll see a lot of great players that open their stance to chip. Mm-hmm. Now, Nick Faldo's philosophy is he says, "Go ahead and preset your impact position." And it kind of sounds high tech, but really, all it is, if you think about a full swing, where you would be at impact in full swing. So Faldo says, look at your hips are open and your weight's on your left side. And he says, just narrow the stance and set up that way to chip. So he's presetting an impact position. But basically, if you can get someone to get that weight on the left side and then move the ball position a little bit back of middle, they're going to pinch the ball off the turf, they're going to take loft off of it, and you're going to let it run to the hole.
So opening it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And just flare out your lead foot.
Your lead foot, yeah.
Just keep your weight on your front foot.
Yes.
And position the ball not on your front foot, but more towards the back foot.
This is something that I've come up with just so people, because it's very detailed.
It's okay. We're not talking to anybody else.
Yeah,
this is your show.
But
now.
This is something that I've kind of come up with in regard to remembering these little details. In short game, your weight always favors your left side, okay? Your weight never favors your right side in the short game, right? So that's first and foremost. Secondly, I call chipping running the ball. I call pitching lofting the ball, right? And the reason why I call it running and lofting, it's an easy way to remember ball position now. When you run the ball, you move the ball position pretty close to your right foot. Run right. That's an easy way to remember ball position. When you loft the ball, you move it closer to your left foot. Loft left. Now, that's for right-handed golfers. Now, very often we have left-handed golfers in our golf schools, and I got to talk about something totally different to get them to remember these little details. But little things like that, because it's amazing. I mean, there's so many little things to remember, especially in a short time frame that we have students together, and it's too much information. It's just, you know, it's a bad thing for the student. So easy ways to remember stuff. Run right, loft left is an easy one.
How is it that you're able to allow the student to free their mind? After a couple days of school, there's so much going on in their head, but really, when they step up to the ball, they shouldn't be thinking about all these swing thoughts and position and everything
Correct.
Like that.
How do you clear it? That's a wonderful question. I think we all get clearer in the mind if we practice it enough and repeat it enough so that it becomes habit, you know?
Right.
We tell our students, it's a kind of a little joking thing that I say to the students, we know they're going out on the golf course right after this instruction, right after lunch. And I said, look, if you try to incorporate every little detail that I've talked about today, my name is going to be used in vain by the third hole today. Because it's way too much for people. They just can't absorb all that. Now, by day two or three, we try to kind of condense it a little bit and get them to kind of really shorten that little mental checklist, you know, because, heck, I'm one of these people that I can't walk and chew gum at the same time. And you can just imagine people that are learning putting, chipping, pitching, sand, full swing for 3 days. That's pretty, or a lot of things to absorb, you know. So we try to get that mental checklist down to one or two things. We say, look, in 3 days, we know we're not going to perfect your golf swing, although we'd like to think we can. But, you know, realistically, it's not going to get perfect in 3 days. But what we want you leaving here with, we want you leaving here with the proper setup and a game plan and a practice routine that you can get better at the game.
And what do you advise as a practice routine? Because we're in a culture and a society that we just don't have time. And golf demands so much of our time when we get the opportunity to play that practice falls by the wayside.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, as I always say, life gets in the way of our leisure time. You know, and if I could play golf every day, I would. That's how much passion I have for it. But time and things that go on limit that. So when that husband or wife or whoever gets that free moment to go play golf, they're going to go play golf. But if your golf is not very good, you better spend some of that time practicing on your game. And I'd much rather go play than practice, but I'm miserable when I play bad golf. And I know why it's bad sometimes, because I haven't put enough time in on the driving range. So you have to make your practice fun, you know. Don't make it like work. It's like me going to the gym. I get on that elliptical machine, I got to have that TV on. And if I don't have that TV on, it is boring. I can't do it. I got to have something that I'm enjoying there while I'm doing this hard work. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's so a distraction. You don't want that at the driving range.
So when I'm practicing, and we try to get our students to do this too, is have little games like when we're putting. I tell students to spend a lot of time working on their putting from this 20, 30-foot range, because this is where we are all day long. And get good at your distance control, you know, feel things, and make it a game. And I say take three golf balls from minimum of 20 feet. Now, your goal is to get those three golf balls into the hole in 6 strokes or less, or 2 strokes per ball. And if you're successful, move on to another hole and do the same thing, and try to do this successfully at 6 different holes. Now, some days trying to get my 6 sets done, I'm late for dinner, but when I'm done, I feel great up here about my putting, you know, and it was kind of fun to do that little task. Now, as I say, if you putt 3 balls down to the hole and you 3-putt one of those balls and your total there was 7, you got to come back to the same spot and try it again until you conquer the hole, 6 or less. So that's a fun little game. If you're chipping, you take the same 3 balls that you were just putting with, move them off the green, chip 3 balls up to the hole. See how many out of those 3 that you can 1-putt. I think everybody's goal should be at least two out of three, you know. And if you're not successful, go back to that spot and chip them up, try to get closer to the hole to 1-putt them. And then when you're pitching the ball, pitching it over a bunker or something, I'm not going to chase around 3 golf balls when I do that, but I will have a stack of golf balls that I'll use, but I'll do it in sets of 5 golf balls. I'll take 5 balls off the pyramid or out of the bag or wherever your getting golf balls from, and you see how many out of five you can get on the green pitching it over the bunker. Hopefully you're trying five out of five. Then you try to see how many out of five can you get within 10 or 15 feet. And you just keep doing it in sets of five. Or if you're practicing with a buddy or a wife or whatever it is, have a contest. All right, come on, let's go. Who's going to get closest to the hole? Make it fun. But if it's just boring ball after ball after ball, my mind wanders. I might as well just go sit in
the
office.
Well, you may not be improving when you're doing ball after ball, right? You're
exactly.
not working on
exactly.
anything. You're just probably making things
worse. But if you can start
worse.
To see that, you know, see some of these positive results, your mind is at ease, and you, when you get into a situation on the golf course, your mind says, well, I did pretty good with this practicing this week. I should be pretty good. But most of us don't practice enough, so we get over that shot, and all we're thinking about is the last time we messed this shot up. A negative thought. So practice is difficult, but you got to make it fun, you know. And I tell people, most of us, mentally, we're done after an hour on the range. Mentally, we're done. Some of us, physically, we're done yeah. after an hour on the range. So if you can split it up a little bit, you know, putting, chipping, pitching. You don't have to hit every golf club in your bag. You don't have to try every little short game shot either. But mix it up a little bit, and it's...
Play nine holes.
It's kind of...
Play
yeah.
six.
Yeah, exactly.
you know.
Exactly. Now, in a facility like this, where we have wonderful short game areas and full swing areas, then I think it's fun to kind of work on your game. You know, we've got great areas. You can hit some out of bunkers. We've got a short game area behind the clubhouse here that I'll give you guys a tour here in a little bit. Just great places to work in your game.
Fabulous.
Yeah, it's nice.
Great. All right, for a single-digit, low handicap player, 1 to 10, we'll go 0 to 10,
mm-hmm.
10 to 20, mid, and 23. How many putts per round should we be looking at for those level players?
As a teacher, you know, I try to get everybody to understand how many strokes they're wasting in putting. You know, I don't know if you realize this, but...
The scorecard gives you two for every hole.
Yeah, right. So,
36.
43% of your shots in a round of golf on the average. Okay, so if you look at any given time of the day, you'll see 20 to 30 people beating their drivers out on the driving range, and you look over on the putting green, and you see one or two people. Okay, and it's used that ratio all day long. Now, why is that? Because putting is boring for most people. It is for me. If I don't have that little game, I'm bored in 2 minutes. So I have to have that little game that I work on. It's much more fun to see how far you can hit your driver, isn't it? But how many times do you hit your driver in a round of golf? 14, if you have, you know, sometimes less. My point here, putting for any golfer, two putting every hole in 18 holes, I'm not a math wizard here, but that's 36 putts. It's probably not a great stat because you've had some opportunities chipping or pitching the ball, and if you're chipping and pitching the ball on the green and then two or three putting, your chipping and pitching isn't worth a darn. So we say 32 putts or less. Now, how easy that is to say, hey, Fred Green, go out and have 32 putts today, especially on this golf course where the greens are big and roly-poly and
I walked up with
tough.
35. It was
one under.
Yeah, one under on putting.
Okay, on this golf course.
Yeah.
So I really... think that it's achievable if you have the proper setup. You know, in putting, you have to control the path, you have to control the club face, you have to control the distance of the ball travel. So that takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
If you don't practice it, you're never going to get good at your distance control. So why do we three putt? Well, we don't get our first putt close enough to the hole, and you miss the second putt. So I think for anybody, I don't care if you're a 36 handicapper or you're a 4 handicapper, I think 32 is doable if you worked at it. Now, obviously, for the 0 to 10, that's a must. And if you look at tour players, they're always 30 or less. The guy that leads the tour in putting every year is always around 28 putts around, 27 putts around. And if you think about that, in 18 holes, that means he one putted half his holes.
Mm.
That's amazing.
That is amazing.
I can't remember the last time I had less than 30 putts in a round of golf. I'm usually around 32. But we tell people, our students, keep track of your putts. And so if you make a 5 on the first hole, write down underneath that 5, 1, 2, or 3, how many putts you had. Don't wait till the end of the round to remember, because you'll never remember it. Add them up, and if you had 37 putts, 5 strokes went right out the window in putting. But what all of us remember is the shot we hit in the water, the shot we hit OB, the shot that took us 2 to get out of a bunker, but we forgot those 5 shots that we wasted in putting. And it's all about, you know, 3-putt avoidance. If you can get good at your distance control, I think it's It's a great thing, you know. I think it's a feat, though, on this golf course. It's one of my goals, to get through a round without a three-putt. It's been a while for me. I'm not a...
And you're the senior instructor at the Faldo Institute at the Marriott.
Right.
Mike Ellis, again, senior instructor, Faldo Institute here at the Shadow Ridge in the Palm Desert. Thank you very much. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Fred.
Some insight.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you. Golf Smarter number 118 is brought to you by Audible.com. Now let's forget about golf instruction for just a minute and remember that golf provides some amazing and hilarious literature. Some may not refer to Rick Riley as literature, but he is entertaining. I really miss his essays in Sports Illustrated. Well, his books are available as audiobooks. Both Who's Your Caddy? And Shanks for Nothing are incredibly entertaining and very funny, and well worth a free download when you sign up today. Again, the first taste is free. Go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter to get your free audiobook. That's AUDIBLE, audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. There's still some time left to sign up to win a Shot Watch. Make sure you click on the contest tab at golfsmarterpodcast.com to enter and win. Deadline for entry is Friday, March 28th, 2008. Oh my goodness. Now, here's some big news that you should know. Last week, I get this email from the people at Shot Watch saying that the normal price of Shot Watch has been significantly reduced. Now, it was great when we got our own little discount, but now I'm talking about a slash. Usually, this Shot Watch sells for $295, and Golf Smarter listeners were able to take advantage of the exclusive 25% savings. Well, forget it. That's all history now, because for a very limited time, and I think there's only 1,000 units of these available, they're only $149. My goodness, $149 from $295 down to $149. But wait, there's more. Oh my God, do I sound corny? As a Golf Smarter listener, you can buy a Shot Watch for $135. And now you need a reason to buy one? All right, well, you might win one. Okay, so $135, all you need to do is go to shotwatch.com/golfsmarter. Make your order now. Limited offer, limited time. Limited units, do it again. Shotwatch.com/golfsmarter. All right, we've got one more golf course to review in Palm Desert, but next week we're going to have two nationwide tour players. Now, we've not done this before. I've not had players on before. Matt Betancourt and Joel Kreibel will be joining us. They're both preparing for the Wine Country Championships that will be played in early April at the course at Wente Vineyards. And early on in Golf Smarter, way early on, we had the director of golf at the time for the course at Wente Vineyards giving us a tee tour of that course. And it's been on the nationwide tour for a couple years. And these players say that is the toughest course on the nationwide tour. And we talked to them about a number of things. I was out there for media day and had a chance to speak to both of them about getting on and surviving in tour competition. What it's like to play professionally in the Tiger era, and what these pros do about the mental game. Really interesting. We talk a lot about the mental game. Pros take a very different approach. So it's really good to listen to that. That'll be coming up on our next episode. Hey, we've reinstituted our listener survey as a tab on the navigation bar at golfsmarterpodcast.com. When you're there to enter a contest or checking out the photos, videos, and our program guides on our blog, we'd really appreciate if you take a couple extra minutes and give us your input on our listener survey. You know, Golf Smarter survives on sponsorship instead of contributions, and there are obvious benefits for all of us with this method. You know, it's really funny. When people ask me what I do, I say, oh, I'm a podcaster. You can imagine the looks that I get. First of all, it's like, and a podcast is what? But you know what a podcast is, and some people do know, but then the obvious question comes across, and you make money doing that, right? Well, only if advertisers can get a sense of who's listening, and that's why we need your information from the listener survey. So please help us out there, okay? And if you do, I'll pick your name in the next drawing, okay? Thank you. Spring begins this week, and that means I can smell golf courses all over the country getting ready for our onslaught. make sure you start your regular exercise regimen so that you can make it all the way through 18 holes, which brings us to today's quote, provided by Gerald Cordova of San Gabriel, California, who says, "It takes me 9 holes to get warmed up. By the 10th, I'm tired." If you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarterpodcast.com.
Hey, this is Kenny Nicholson. We get questions all the time about adding distance with new clubs, but did you ever consider using different balls depending on how long a course plays? On the next episode of the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf Podcast, we'll be joined by the Director of Golf Ball Development for Nike, Mr. Rock Ishii.
When I get questions like, what golf ball do you play? And I always answer, you know, depending on golf course I play. When I play 7,000-yard golf course, I probably bring one black with me. And 6,500 yards, you know, a little bit shorter, I play one platinum because, you know, green side performance is key, bigger than distance. But winter time, you know, which is soft brown and the green soft as well, I play calmer.
Hi, this is Fred Green. Join Kenny Nicholson and myself for an in-depth conversation about Nike golf balls. It's episode number 16 of the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf Podcast. Free on iTunes or at golfbetterpodcast.com.